Now, is it midway through the IPL or is it the commencement still of the county championship season, Pezza? Whereabouts are you vis-a-vis cricket seasons right now?
Oh, man. That's like blue dress, gold dress stuff, isn't it?
Okay.
It just depends how you see life, you know? Mm-hmm. Do the Anglos know what the Indians are doing? Do the Indians know what the Anglos are doing? Are we talking to each other?
Yeah.
Does anyone care?
Yeah. Communication's the key.
Exactly.
And that's why we're communicating to you that whilst the main podcast is not going on for us at the moment, of course, you can join us for 5 IPL shows a week and 0 county championship review shows per week, it should be said, at the same time, that you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/greatcricketer. Every single Friday, hashtag ask TGC Fridays. I'm sure you already know about it if you've been a fan for the show for a little while. And over the last little while, over the last few years, we've done 190 recorded episodes. 190 episode 190 is coming out this Friday in a couple of days' time. But we did a Hall of Fame episode after episode 100, and we are just over the next few weeks, we are releasing a couple of those old classics, so to speak. Can you call them old classics? Is that what we're calling them?
Again, in the eye of the beholder, others might just think this is. Utter tripe.
It's utter garbage.
Garbage.
It's garbage.
It is. Humanity is diminished for this. This art. This thing that it postures as art.
Boys, I think less of you for releasing this.
Dumber, having heard it.
I actually hate you. Stop talking to me.
May God have mercy on your soul.
Anyway,
sort of thing.
Anyway, we thought we might tease a couple just in case you wanted to join us.
People liked the tease last week.
Yeah, they liked it.
They liked it.
Yeah.
A couple of people jumped on Patreon as well. Okay. Like, oh, if that's the quality that's coming in, then I want to be part of that.
So we thought we'd do it again this week and the next week and probably the week after that as we head into the next Hall of Fame episode after episode 200 on Patreon. Patreon.com/greatcricketer to sign up for $5 or $10 a month. You can join us there. And this teaser is a question that came in a few years ago after a young chap had mixed music, cricket, and hash brownies all together at the same time for hilarious consequences and indeed effects. So please enjoy this over the next 15, 16 minutes of this question from a couple of years ago. If you like this kind of stuff, these are the kind of questions we do get on Patreon. We answer these questions every Friday. Please enjoy this question from Patreon. By patrons, for patrons, here at TGC. Story of the week, this one, Pez, I reckon.
Yeah, it is. Now, buckle up. Goes for a little while, but we think it's good. This is from Wayno. Let's just say it's from Wayno.
I'm just saying what he's called you at the beginning. Yeah, that's good.
Dear Michael Pezzanuto and the Hig Rat. Again, buckle up. Have been contemplating whether to send this one in for some time now, as the main plot of the story doesn't necessarily take place on a cricket field. However, as you both quite frequently allude to, this story, along with everything in life, always ends up coming back to cricket in some form or another. Plus, the past Ask TGC Friday themes of drug-related mishaps intertwined with cricket have made this feel less off-topic. My story takes place in the summer of 2016-17, where on the very rare occasion I was brave enough to confront my thirds captain and inform him that I can't play this weekend, mate. The missus has got me tickets to Southbound. Being the coward that I am, I couldn't admit to his face that in fact it was me who had organised the entire weekend away with our friendship group. I was having a shocking year with the bat, so I was desperately keen to avoid playing cricket for one weekend at least. Southbound was a very popular and well-loved music festival over here in WA. Look at this background. This is great.
Good.
This was before rumour has it the touring company that owned the festival couldn't pay Eddie Vedder 1 year, pay your subs. And Eddie decided to sue their ass into bankruptcy. It was a 2 to 3 day camping festival, so people from all over WA would drive to a paddock in the middle of nowhere and set up camp next to their cars in the 40-degree heat of a Western Australian summer. The 7 a.m. departure time from Perth worked brilliantly. The third test between Australia and Pakistan had just started on grandstand, so our soundtrack to the 3-hour drive couldn't have been more sorted. However, my girlfriend and the hero of this story, let's call her Lucy, did not share the same sentiment. After about 40 minutes of me switching back and forth between grandstand and Spotify's soft rock indie chart toppers of 2016 for a score update, inverted commas, she decided to pull the pin and swap cars. For the rest of the ride, myself and my 3 other mates, who also love cricket but aren't dumb enough to actually keep playing, listened to the subtle tones of Gerald Wheatley describe David Warner make a 78-ball ton in the first session of the day the SCG. I found it hard to like the bloke even back then. However, for that car ride, he made us feel safer than any poorly made seatbelt or airbag would in my shitty 2009 Holden Astra. Fast forward about 35 hours and we were coming to the end of our weekend festival. The girls had decided to leave our camping and drinking quarters to head into the festival to catch the afternoon set of Norwegian band High as a Kite. Note band name and nationality for future irony. Before returning to pick us up for the night's proceedings. When the girls left the campsite, it was your usual festival scene. A few drinking games going on, with some mingling happening between surrounding campsites. Me and my mates had just challenged the group of Nordic blokes next to us for a few games of beer pong. While waiting for my turn, I snuck off to the toilet to A, find some reception, and B, get a score update on not only the Aussies, but also to see how my third grade side went on Saturday. And yes, if you are wondering, checking your My Cricket while being crammed next to about 20 blokes in a festival urinal does bring on a whole new level of self-consciousness. Inverted commas. Was that guy checking out my dick, or was he simply amused at my season batting average? When returning to our campsite, one of our mates provided me with the update that we now all owed him $25, as he had scored us some, inverted commas, brownies off the Nordic blokes camping next to us. Usually not being a massive drug user and also not knowing what exactly was in those brownies, I would have simply passed on the offer. However, after being 6 hours deep into a drinking session and just finding out that even Pete Hanscom could score a test match 100, harsh, I popped my allocated square into my mouth without any thought. We would later find out that my mate's lost in translation moment with our Norwegian friend next door would prove fairly costly, as the square that I had just popped in my mouth was meant for the four of us. And in fact, old mate had sold us enough brownie, inverted commas, for all 16 of us at our campsite. Fuck, and not just me, the four peanuts who had unknowingly consumed 16 people's worth in one whack. Here we go.
Jeez, here we go.
Here we go.
Buckle up here, Pezzy.
Okay. The girls returned to our campsite happy as Larry. Being blissfully unaware of what we'd just done to ourselves, we carried on playing drinking games as usual. Due to being about a foot shorter than the rest of my mates, good little player, I was the first one to drift off to Major Tom. The sudden urge to eat an entire 8-pack of Uncle Toby's La Snack Cheese and Biscuits should have been the dead giveaway that I was in trouble. The sun started to become a major annoyance for me, not the 40-degree heat, but simply the light coming off it. So on my journey to look for anything I could find to eat, I found my large cricket floppy wide-brim hat in the back seat of my car. I substituted this onto my head in place of my wannabe cool guy American sports hat and sat back down at the table. I did not move or speak for the next 30 minutes. I can still remember thinking to myself, fuck, mate, you're in a bit of trouble here. Just tell someone you've had a bad reaction to something and go to bed. However, I legitimately couldn't move or talk. I should mention at this point of the story, the rest of the events are now being described from mates' retellings and from Lucy's rebuttal to any argument we've had over the past 4 years. It was now time to go into the festival. By now, Lucy had figured out something was up. She attempted to help me to my feet, thinking that I was just very pissed. However, as soon as I got to my feet, I collapsed forward, smacking my head off the corner of the table and hitting the deck face down. Between the screams, I could still distinctly hear one of my mates declaring, "Oh, fuck, we may have really done our ass here." The sunnies that were covering my bonkered eyes had now been dislodged, and everyone was well aware of the state I was in. The medics were called into the camping area, and I was whisked away to the medical tent in a wheelchair, with a very worried Lucy by my side the whole way. One by one, my three other mates also became victim to our poor decisions. However, by this stage, they were well prepared for what was to come and had put themselves to bed, with one even locking himself in his car. For the next 4 to 5 hours, I had medical staff coming in and checking up on me. I could somewhat still comprehend what was going on around me, but could not move a muscle or say a word. All the time having to listen to Lucy speak to medical professionals about what my emergency contact details were, check the lump on the side of my head, and try to work out what I had taken. At one stage, they even wheelchaired me off to the disabled toilets where I was helped into and onto the toilet by my loving girlfriend. Oh my God. It was lovely. At about 1 a.m. in the morning, after many, many hours of sitting next to me with absolutely zero form of communication or acknowledgement, I began dribbling some noises towards Lucy's direction. Excited at the idea I wasn't potentially brain dead, she ran over to the medics to get their attention. Propping me upright and placing my floppy brim hat that Lucy had put over my face to give me some privacy from onlookers to the side of the bed, the medics attempted to get some communication to see how bad I really was. "Hey, mate, how you doing?" they said. "Had a bit of a big day, have ya?" More murmuring and dribbling from my end. "That's all right, mate. Happens to the best of us. Any idea where you are?" More dribbling as I attempt to reach over for my hat to put back over my face as the light from the medic's torch is apparently annoying me. "It's okay, mate. Your hat is safe with us. Did you play a bit of cricket today?" And after about 5 hours of completely zero communication to not only the medical staff but also to my poor girlfriend, my head whips back to the direction of the medic and snaps, "Yeah, mate, bowled a couple of overs." I then effortlessly lean over to the side of the bed, vomit up the rest of the Uncle Toby's little snack packs, and pass out. My questions for you guys are, one, has cricket infiltrated my life so badly that even in my darkest hour, the smallest sign of someone asking how I went at cricket would snap me out of a drug-induced paralysis? Two, should I let medical professionals know that a new medical tactic for getting a response from coma patients could be to ask them about their batting average? Three, what the fuck was in those brownies? And four, despite this forever putting me on the back foot in future arguments with my partner, was this event actually an incredibly important part to the success of our relationship and our understanding of each other? For example, it may have helped Lucy come to terms with the fact that I needed to stripped down to my underwear with borderline tears in my eyes when watching the last 10 overs of the Headingley Test match at 1 a.m. on a Monday morning. Love your work, fellas. Genuinely look forward to both pods every week. I was going to put anon, but I hardly doubt anyone from my work would actually pay for this shit. Wayno. Well done, Wayno.
Well done, Wayno. Great yep. story.
Hope you stuck with that.
And well read, Pezzy lad.
Right. Right.
Bit to go through here, mate.
Yep.
One. Has cricket infiltrated my life so badly that even my darkest hour, the smallest sign of someone asking how I went at cricket would snap me out of a drug-induced paralysis. Now, I did some research about how one would go about...
Love a bit of medical research.
How one would go about snapping someone out of a drug-induced paralysis, and actually reminded me a lot of how you would communicate with someone if they were thinking about playing cricket again. After now, this is from the Drug and Alcohol Research Training Australia page, yeah. which, as you know, is my Bible. Mm. Helping someone who is drug affected, i.e. plays cricket, can be difficult and potentially dangerous. Often the person may be aggressive and uncooperative.
Mm-hmm.
While it is important to try and keep your friends safe, the first priority must always be your personal safety. Never be afraid to pass a problem over to someone else, particularly if they become violent.
Hey.
Now, here are some tips.
This is pre-sandpaper.
Exactly. First tip, stay with them and never leave them alone. Two, change the environment. So, you know, in cricket and sets, maybe show them a beach.
Eerie.
Maybe an afternoon picnic. Three, monitor them. So check their micro scores. Reassure them and talk them down. You know, so they can't think about, oh, this will be my season. It won't be. Let them know the time. You know, mate, you're 27. It's not going to get any better. Maybe just pack it in. Help them to relax by breathing with them. And the final one, if in doubt, call for help. So really hold an intervention. So it actually translates quite nicely between snapping someone out of a drug-induced paralysis and talking to someone about playing cricket again. Should I let medical professionals know that a new medical tactic for getting a response from coma patients could be to ask them about their batting average? Obviously, yes. What the fuck was in those brownies? Don't know. Let us know. And four, despite forever putting me on the back foot in my future agreements, blah, 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 about the relationship. Yeah, absolutely, yes. And rightfully so, Lucy, inverted commas, will now hold this over you for the rest of her life. It only gets into dangerous waters when she starts saying, we don't ever talk about that again. That's when it starts to get a little bit, how's it going? And then the last point that I had was about the Headingley, and we've spoken about that at length, and I think it's just, that's one of the great things about the Headingley test match is that you remember exactly where you were. I remember exactly where I was, who I was with, what I was doing, what happened when the ball hit fucking Stokes, the missed run out, all that shit. I mean, it's bringing up
Salmon.
Bad memories. But that's the great thing about that test series and that test match in general. It's like a real, like, you know, where were you when the Twin Towers came down?
I'm really curious just about the end bit here where he had to strip down
that's
naked.
That's what I mean, yeah.
There's something primal about that, isn't there?
This is
close and I'm anxious. So
I must shed.
I must, get rid of anything weighing me down with borderline tears in my eyes. Just ends the match nude, crying. That is what it was like, to be honest. And as Tim Payne said, he just had a day out. he goes, it just goes to show like how deeply embedded cricket can be in your deep conscious, your subconscious, right? I don't know if you've had that, I had a few examples like that, but not in any sort of, and we're not glorifying any drug scenarios here, by the way. It's just it's a fact of life. Some people use it and this is what happens. But like there was a few occasions when I was younger, when I was prepubescent, like I'd fall asleep in the lounge and like dad would carry me into bed and I'd tell him what I was going to do next day in cricket and he'd tell me the next day.
Really? Yeah. So you don't remember saying it, but
No.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But is that sneak off for four and
But then he would say like, you promised me 100 today.
So. Actually did happen. I remember I've got a mate, who it's just a festival story, right? This is not anything to do with like illicit drugs. He just got on the beers in line with the intro. He'd had more than a couple. And his thing was like, he loves cricket. And his thing was like, whenever he gets super loose, he ends up kind of like, parroting like an aggressive cricketer. He just really enjoyed it. Because like you, at festivals, you can bring like a bat and ball and stuff. It's not too passe to do that as long as you do it the right way.
Yeah.
He got so loose. It was Pete's Ridge Festival, right? So this is a folk festival on the central coast of New South Wales, like literally folk music and all that kind of gear.
Yeah.
And he got so loose that he like zinced up and put his club cricket hat on and started started calling himself, I don't know why, but he's calling himself Muhasi. So like it's up to Mike Hussey, but I don't know why. But he's just going, I'm Muhasi. And like the girls were with, they weren't liking it, but he was basically like weird. Carrying around his tennis ball and using tents as run out opportunities. That's how he liked to enjoy himself, you know. And I don't judge it.
How was your weekend? Yeah, just run out. I wouldn't say. You tell me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he picked up that weekend.
Oh, yeah,
but he was enjoying himself, and so obviously cricket was in the subconscious.
I love that.
So, yeah, I can identify with the idea that, like, it just sits so deeply within you.
It's like it's anything you see. Like, you're holding a phallic object and you're like, I'm going to shadow bat with this now.
Yeah.
It's you see a nice bit of grass. I wonder how that would snake. You know, how does that feel? That kind of shit.
Everywhere. And if you're in the, like, West Australian sun and you're feeling a little bit, well, it was more than dazed, and he kind of comes to, like, I could understand why he would feel like he's in a cricket environment, but, because that's being dazed in the sun.
Pretty much
how you feel most of the time.
Yeah, so there's way too many people around, I suppose.
Good point. Got a floppy on. He's like, oh, I may as well be, I'm playing cricket.
And also the opportunity, he's been given opportunities to like talk about his cricket. He's like, here we go, someone's finally asked me.
Dad never done this.
Yeah. 2 for 27.
Yeah, bowled a couple overs.
Unlucky.
I love that, like, he's trying to communicate. He's really, because I think maybe all of us can identify, especially if you're younger, you know, trying to communicate when you might be quite cooked. And you're just like, you're murmuring and slurring your words, but you can't actually get it out. And then the easiest thing to say is just to say, like, yeah, I bowled a couple overs. You know, it's like all one word.
That
bit comes out.
Yeah, it's like high as a kite. It's all one word. Well, on that, I remember this was about, when you say younger, I mean, this was embarrassingly recent. This was maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. Mm. And I matched with this woman on the internet. Mm-hmm. On Tinder or something. And we had a bet going. And it was one of those ones. We might have matched like a few times before. This is how it goes, the intent sometimes. We never met up. And then it was like, well, are we going to do this or not? And it was a time when the State of Origin was on.
Right.
And I think we made the bet. And it was like, well, if New South Wales win the Origin, then we'll go out. And if they don't, we won't. I think Queensland won 3-0 that year. So.
Yeah, that's right. Cam Smith. Masterclass.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so about a few months after that, she saw me at a bar, and I say that she saw me.
I learned exactly how you said that.
Yep. And she messaged me the next day, and she's like, "Oh, it was nice to meet you last night." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And then she's like, "Well, I saw you at the bar, and then I thought I'd come up to you and introduce myself." And her direct line was, "You tried to speak, but just couldn't."
I was thinking, mate, where's this going? Because we're just talking about cricket. I was talking about a bird who went up to me once. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I was wearing a floppy.
Yeah, right. And you just couldn't speak.
I don't remember that interaction in any way.
Again, you know, this isn't a glorification of that. This is more just a honest exchange of fact and truth.
It's an ideas exchange.
It's an ideas exchange. Yeah. It's part of the culture. This is the culture of, you know, Australian cricket. We do not resile from our obligation to hold up that mirror. Okay, who are you talking to, Pezza? Don't know.
I don't know. It's not me. You're glazed over.
I don't know.
How'd you go today?
Mm.